KBTC, a viewer-supported community service of Bates Technical College.
From KBTC Public Television Studios in Tacoma, Washington, it's the Northwest Now podcast. Each week, we take a closer look at the people and issues that affect all of us here in Western Washington. So sit back, relax, and join the conversation with your host, Tom Lason.
COVID-19 blew a hole in Seattle's art scene, and it's only now starting to come back. Part of that comeback includes the Seattle Art Museum and its new CEO, Scott Stulen. Can Sam help Seattle recover from the civic unrest, bad governance, and crime that turned parts of the Emerald City into a combat zone? That's part of the discussion tonight on Northwest Now. Scott Stulen has been in place since last August, coming to lead the Seattle Art Museum from the Philbrook Museum of Art in Tulsa, Oklahoma. He's got a master's in fine art focusing on the visual arts like painting and drawing with a bachelor's in sculpture. Sam has done well since COVID, turning a profit in the past 3 years with some recent exhibitions of national importance. But with that said, membership is down about 25% from pre-pandemic levels. Despite his fondness for fine art, Stulen stoked attendance at Philbrook with things like a burger night, a mini golf tournament, and a cat video festival. So walking that fine line between what people should see and what they want to see is part of the job. I have often jokingly told people, you know something, if I wanted to boost the ratings for Northwest Now, I would make it Northwest Now Cats and Dogs Edition. With some user-generated content, I'm telling you, we'd zoom right to the top of the charts. You actually did that a little bit at Philbrook. You had the mini golf and cat videos and barbecuing hamburgers, all great. But I think the broader question here is there's the art we should be interested in and study and know because we should. And then there's the art that we want to look at that's interesting, cool, and popular. How do you, as a director in the position you're in, get that balance right between the main course and dessert?
Well, balance is the key about all of it. But I also think often museums have leaned too far to the one side of being either stuffy or a little too kind of like impenetrable in a way in which a lot of audiences feel like, well, that's not for me, or I walk in and I'm just confused by what I'm seeing, and then I'm like, I guess this isn't really speaking my language. So things like, and I support the cats and dogs thing, I'll say it works, but if you find different ways to invite people in, so you know, with the Cat Video Festival, we did burger nights, we did various types of things at the museum that invited an audience that had never been there before, right?
Yeah.
So they came in and they're like, okay, well, this thing's cool, I'm coming with my friends, I'm having fun with my family here, what's that around the corner? So I'm going into the gallery, I'm like, well, this is interesting. And then if you take it the extra step and you make how you're speaking about that work connect to that audience and feel relevant to their lives today, then you're in.
Yeah.
And that's been my strategy places. How do you make people feel at home in the museum? How do you invite people into places they maybe wouldn't have naturally gone? And one of the best ways of doing it is actually through play, through fun, through being social.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think you're right on the money with that. In the media world, that phenomenon is called discovery.
Right.
You're opening the door for discovery there. Hey, come watch Star Trek, but there's these other cool shows.
That's right.
Same with the museum. Hey, come for burger night.
Yes.
But, you know, I actually like some of these paintings that are over in the thing, and I want to learn more.
Exactly. And then you also, the other challenge for museums is like, I come once, I saw everything. I'm like, all right, I saw that, I did that, I'm good. So being able to do other programs and activities means I'm coming this week to have a burger, I'm coming next week to see a film, I'm coming on my lunch break because I just want to get away from everything and recharge a different week. How do you create different entry points for different types of experiences?
I think that is one of the greatest challenges that a museum director faces today. I'm not in the industry, but it just occurs to me as I've been, you know, doing some background for this. We live in a world now where swipe, 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 click, click, click.
Yes.
These pictures have been on the wall for a month.
That's right.
I'm not going back to see those pictures. I saw them a month, a year. Are you kidding? So, A, how do you know when to cycle this? And B, how do you possibly get enough inventory to survive in a world where I want to see the new thing?
Right. It's a great challenge. I mean, and I think what you're speaking to is, yes, it is that challenge. There's also another layer to this. It's harder actually to penetrate an audience now through the marketing. So people don't know about shows happening until months they've been up.
Mm-hmm.
So actually extending the shows longer is working more in our favor now than the rotation. The other thing is most museums show between 3% and 5% of their total collection. So how do you have more of those pieces come out? How do you see different things? My goal is that if you come multiple times during the year, every single time you see something new.
Yeah.
And also that you're different types of activities and things that you can engage with. So that's on the museum of programming, having different ways that you engage with that art. But I also think there's another piece of it with the swipe culture. How do you actually slow people down? And I think actually slowing down and looking at a work of art is not something that you inherently know. You kind of need to learn it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's on us to kind of, how do we create that prompt? How do you make you sit in front of something for 30 seconds, maybe a minute, which feels like an eternity, particularly for kids,
yeah. Right.
to do it. But I think there's something to that. And I love the fact you can go online, see any work of art in the world anywhere through it, which is amazing.
Yeah.
It does not replicate sitting in front of the real thing.
No, and seeing the scope of it, the size of
Correct.
It, the color of it, and some of those things. I would say, too, it's hard. You don't want to change the channel because Sam's received some donations and now has some nationally significant collections.
Right.
Which you don't want to say, well, that's not here this month. No, we came. Now, in my case, I would come to see those nationally significant
that's
collections
great.
And want to make darn sure they're there.
Yes.
So that's trying to serve several different masters.
Yes, and this is the puzzle.
Yeah.
But what we want to do is we want to have those anchor pieces. So if you want to come and see that work of art that you've always loved, you remember it as a kid coming in, we want those pieces to be there so that you can come and see your good friends that are there. And then discover something totally new. So coming full circle, it's about the balance. How do you have both those things happening all the time?
I got to some of the good stuff early. I want to swing back around and get into your bio a little bit. Talk a little bit about where you're from, your education, your interests, and how your track to get here.
Sure. So I'm somewhat unusual as a museum director. So I grew up in Minnesota. So I grew up in like outstate rural Minnesota resort country there. I went to school. My undergrad is in sculpture. From the University of Wisconsin. My master's is in painting and drawing from University of Minnesota. And I wanted to teach painting, and I wanted to just make my own work, and I showed my own artwork around the country for many years, and I fell into the museum world somewhat by accident. So I came in through education and then kind of came up through programming, eventually curatorial, doing mostly music and film and dance and performing arts, and then eventually I became a director, which I never really thought was ever going to happen. Now, I will say my background's somewhat rare. I'm the only museum director in the country with a studio art master's background. Most are art historians or come from finance, which, again, yeah, not a you know, judgment call, better or worse.
You can't see me rolling my eyes over here, because we're gonna bring that up in a minute, but about the finance director.
Yeah. but really what it is I think it gives me a slightly different perspective. So, when I'm working with artists, like I'm, one of them.
Yeah.
I'm still making work. I've DJed for the last 20 years. I do a lot of things that are kind of on that making side of thing. And I think it influences how I approach the museum.
And I think that's so huge. I am such a proponent of people coming up through the system and actually making and doing the thing before they run the
right.
thing.
Yeah.
Now, that is not cool in media. You can be a management stooge coming out of sales and run a news department, or at least be the GM. And there are many, I don't want to cast aspersions on everybody. But I just think it's important to have done a lot of different jobs. And you know something? If you're an artist who becomes a director, to me, that's a much different vibe than a guy. I did spreadsheets and now I'm telling the art museum how to do things. So I think there's just tremendous value to that. With that said, you want to do the art. You want to do the cool stuff.
Yeah.
Sustainability,
yeah.
Counting the nickels, making sure that we have enough people coming through the door, making sure our membership's up. That's kind of the dark side of what you have to do now as an artist. Do you like that, or do you hold your nose and do it? How do you approach it?
I like it because it matters and allowed to do all the other stuff that we want to do. So it's important. So I think when I came up, particularly my first director job, there was this, they knew I could do the programming, had a track record of doing that. They knew I have innovation ideas. It was whether or not could I fund it. And I've been very successful in doing that. And part of it has been the same innovation I've been applying to programming, applying that to revenue. So how do you think about different ways that you can bring in membership? How do you think about different ways you can create revenue programs to be able to do all the things that museums are doing? And in some ways, too, borrowing from other areas, so borrowing from for-profit models as much as nonprofit models, thinking about ways like, why do you want to come back to the museum? Let's lean into that. How do we make more of that? How mm-hmm. do we make the museum be a cool social space that you want to come on a Thursday night, not just once a year? All those things kind of link together. So I really apply kind of that same approach to the finance side of it as I do the programming side.
So why you maybe like to be doing a sculpture in the back room, you are forced to wear your management hat. You know, welcome to Seattle. Here comes an 11-day strike.
Yes.
You're now a union shop. Yep. It got resolved. Any lasting implications of that? Is it long-term a good thing, a bad thing? How do you view it?
It's a good thing. I think coming in, I mean, nobody wants to walk into a situation.
Yeah.
And this is one that had been going for a couple of years, so I kind of inherited it coming in. But to be able to reach a resolution relatively quickly. But for me, it was learning a lot. I learned a lot about the organization. I learned about Seattle. I learned about who I have on my team. I think that's incredibly important. And through that process, it surfaced some adjacent things with the organization that allowed me to take care of those right away that may have taken a much longer time to deal with.
So retirements and
exactly.
Work rules. And,
just how we're kind of, approaching labor and we want to support our staff. And there's also those things that are non-compensation. Like, what are those other areas that we can look at? So in a way, it was like in somewhat of kind of, I wouldn't want to do it again, but it was a blessing to kind of go through all of that and learn from it. So we're in a great place going forward, with the union, and I look forward to continuing to grow that.
In reading your bio, you'd been targeting Sam for a long time. You always wanted to come to Seattle and do this. Along with that, you talk a little bit about the relationship management piece. You manage relationships in Tulsa. There's some big oil money there. There are people with money.
Yep.
Here there are billionaires.
Yes.
And they have big art collections.
They do.
And how are you managing that? Do you feel like you're equipped to manage it?
Mm-hmm.
But what's out there? Are there big collections you're trying to get? What have you received? Talk a little bit about your plan when it comes to that much bigger, more global even piece that you're dealing with here.
Yeah. Well, it's really exciting. I mean, there's some tremendous supporters here that have been very generous, not only to Sam, but to all sorts of organizations across the region. There's amazing collections here, some of which have already been gifted to Sam, and some, of course, that we want to nurture in the future. So I think it's just a blessing to be able to kind of work with people that are avid collectors, that know art, that are passionate about the arts community here. And I think part of it is like whenever you're dealing with somebody who's supporting the museum, I get asked often, like, is it hard to ask for money for things? I think it's really easy to do when you believe in what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I truly believe in what we're doing through the museum. And I know that, I was brought in for a purpose here and be able to execute that. So I feel like it's a great synergy and I'm just really excited to be here.
Yeah, I don't think there's any way, unless you're a sociopath, you can't ask for money for something you don't believe
in. No, you have to believe it and be excited about it.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of which, people with some big money, Paul Allen Family Foundation, they're bringing back Free First Thursday, which was there, then it went away, and now it's coming back. Talk a little bit about some of these engagement pieces, and I'll hit you next on World Cup. But first, the Thursday nights, how's that coming?
So Thursday nights, they had been, COVID hit, and a lot of things kind of rolled back downtown, and we brought those back, so those are back in full force. So all locations are free on Thursday nights. Our Thursday, actually all day, but Thursday nights in particular, we're programming. We also have the south entrance, so where the Hammering Man sculpture is.
Yep.
Up the harbor steps, that is now open. That's been closed for over 5 years, so that is open now. We're adding more art to public spaces. We're adding more to those entryways. And then we're making those nights be really kind of interactive. So having like music some nights, having different types of film programs or lectures or other things. So if you go to the website, you'll see all the stuff we're planning there. But the biggest thing is I want you thinking about those Thursday nights as an example. Like, what are we going to do tonight? Like, well, we always, Sam always does cool stuff on Thursday nights. I don't even know what it is, but I know it's going to be interesting.
Let's
and
just
kind of come over.
Yeah, yeah. Well, talk a little bit about that, too. You've been here not quite a year.
It's about 7 months.
But downtown Seattle really took some lumps in the early part of this decade. And it's gonna be a while to fight out of them, like it or not. What role can Sam play in that as you open things up and try to bring some of that pedestrian traffic back? Do you see that as an opportunity for Sam, or do you smack your forehead and say, gee whiz, I wish downtown wasn't a combat zone? How do you view it?
Well, I would say I think it's an opportunity in it. And even in the short time I've been here, it's improved considerably downtown. I think always the lagging thing is there's the kind of reality versus the perception.
Yeah.
And a lot of people need to come down to see it for themselves. Really, it is. And that's real. And that can be years sometimes to be able to overcome that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think us working with a lot of our other partner organizations downtown to really kind of have that message out there. But the big thing is when you come down, it needs to kind of match that reality. So we're really focusing a lot. I will say I'm rolling out a vision for the museum, and the first part of it is being how we're kind of hospitable, how we're clean and welcoming and inclusive, and have that spirit where everything feels like you're coming in and I feel like I'm at a safe, welcoming environment, which is key. And sometimes that's more important than the art that's on the wall.
Yeah.
And those two things that need to work in sync. So we put a lot of efforts into that, and I know our fellow organizations are too.
You also want to make sure that you're, it's the Twitterverse will probably get you for pandering, trying to tie the art museum into the World Cup. But by the same token, when there's something massive happening, you got to try to get a piece of it.
Oh, yeah.
So talk a little bit about the World Cup and what you think it's going to do. And is there any role that an art museum can play in something like the World Cup?
Oh, absolutely. And I will say I'm a big sports fan, so we're going to lean hard. But also it's an opportunity. I mean, having millions of people, come to the region, you want people to be able to see, what's Seattle about? And we want Sam to be one of those things that you do. I mean, along with going to the market or the Space Needle, that Sam is just one of those things that you have to do while you're there. So we're planning on doing everything from activations there. Hopefully we can even you can watch some matches at the museum.
Yeah.
We're going to have jerseys in the shop. It'll be Sam with artists doing jerseys.
Ah.
We're going to be leaning in a lot of ways. And then we have the Olympic Sculpture Park, too. So that's going to be a key connection point as people go up to some of the fan experiences around the Space Needle. So we want to connect that through, and we're going to be having art experiences along that whole way. So we'll be deeply part of it, looking at ways that we can interact and engage. And I hope as visitors come, we're one of those places they go.
Get a little arty here, talk about art itself. Is startup art still possible with all the high costs, especially in a place like Seattle? I've said for a long time, the next big thing coming out of the Northwest now is probably going to come from the South Sound or beyond, because you can't be a poor, broke artist anymore in Seattle. Is that important? Does that matter? Do I have that right?
I think there's actually, it's starting to kind of turn again where there is more spaces available for artists. I mean, it is difficult. I mean, you need to find a place that you can kind of live and work and be able to kind of function. But there's a lot of amazing artists that are working here that are in the space. I'm getting to meet a lot of them now, and I've been very impressed with things that are happening. And I do see in some of those areas, yes, it is further south where studio space and other things are opening up. But artists are incredibly innovative. And there's a lot of artists doing work now where they're doing it from their laptop, from their kitchen table, and outsourcing even some of the production. So sometimes the environment will change a little bit, even what the work looks like. Now, could we do more to support our artists and create more livability? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping some of that will come in the future.
Talking a little bit about balance, again, that word keeps coming up in your gig, doesn't it?
It does.
I will cop to my own biases. I would go up there to look at representational art as opposed to the abstract stuff. And you've only got so much square footage, only so much wall space. How do you get the balance right between, the ball of yarn or the banana duct tape to the wall, which is the big one lately, versus what I consider to be something worth going to see?
Well, I think it's all about balance again, like you said. But I think it's really thinking there are people that want to see the banana on the wall for the spectacle of that. But I think what you really want to do is I feel strongly that you can take an artwork from 4,000 years ago or from 4 weeks ago, and it's really about how you connect it to things that are relevant to your life now. And there is ways of, how do you have that abstract piece and kind of enter in so you maybe have a better way of looking at it, but also knowing, acknowledging pieces that people really love and want to see all the time. So I think the idea is that we are different type of experiences for different people and different types of days.
All things for everybody.
Exactly. And so I think it's about having a variety. And I think what you don't want is something that feels static.
Yeah.
So I'm coming in, it's the same stuff above we've seen, or this is the same place that's been here for 30 years in that same spot. How do we really have something where it feels like it's changing, it's dynamic? And then I think the big connection point, how do we make it, interesting to you and your life right now?
In the interest of transparency, we're pre-recording this a little bit, but talk about maybe not this week, but what's hot this year? I've just got a few bullet points here. Ai Weiwei, of course, is downtown. The Asian Art Museum, and at the Asian Art Museum, you've got some things going on. The Shirley Family's Calder Collection.
Yes.
What's important? What's on your radar? And what can people look at for 2025?
Yeah, I think for this year, the can't miss is the Ai Weiwei show. We just opened this. It's going to run through September, so it's up for a longer run. This is the largest exhibit of his work ever in the U.S. It's 130 works downtown. It's a whole variety of things. You'll never look at Legos the same way again.
Yeah.
I promise you, if you've seen the show. But his work couldn't be any more timely, because it's really about resistance and really thinking about authoritarianism and censorship and somebody who's actually lived that and very authentically lived that in their life. But are you seeing it through their work? And a lot of it has been against the Chinese government, but you could apply that to a lot of things. And he does in the work to things that are happening right now. But that is all over downtown, so you see it there. And then we also have a piece that's at the Asian Art Museum, which is Monet's Water Lilies painting, 50 feet long, in Lego. And it's amazing. And then we will be having, starting mid-May at the Olympic Sculpture Park, having the Chinese Zodiac Heads, one of his sculptures, okay, in bronze. And that'll be up for 2 years out there. So that'll be up, wow, through World Cup, so you can come out and see that. And, of course, the Olympic Sculpture Park is free all the time.
Calder Collection, what else is it? What are somebody, what do you kind of consider the museum's crown jewels?
Yeah, the Calder Collection absolutely is one of those, and we continue to kind of add more pieces to that and have different exhibitions. Next year, we'll having Tara Donovan will be kind of in conversation with Calder. But we'll always want to have it. So there's Calder's you can always come and see, plus other types of work in the collection. So if you want to see, we're going to be rehanging some of our African collection coming up and some of our Middle Eastern galleries. If you like Aboriginal art, we have an amazing collection of that. And then we have this fall, we're doing a show called Farm to Table, which will be French Impressionism around food and food culture. So again, that diversity of having a different type of work you can see at any point in time. I want you to be able to, you know, come to the museum and feel like this is, you know, I didn't see it all this time.
Yeah.
I need to come back again. And I promise you right now, there's a lot more you can see in one visit. And then hopefully people become members and support the museum.
You talk about seeing a lot. When I think of your footprint downtown, are you kind of landlocked? Can you build up? If as a management guy, you've got to have the 5-year vision and the 10-year vision.
Yeah.
What are the options there when it comes to size and expansion?
We've got some options there, but I will say currently we have a lot of space that isn't used in the museum.
Okay.
So if you walk in, there's a lot of open space, and we want to be able to fill more of that space, have more works from the collection, and fill those public spaces. I want to have more art that you see even before you go to the paywall, and areas that you can even kind of lounge areas, you can kind of hang out in those spaces.
Public spaces.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we have other areas in the museum that we can utilize, I think, a little bit more effectively. Same thing with having some more work out at the Olympic Sculpture Park. And then thinking more, innovatively around the Asian Art Museum. So we do have some options in the future. And of course, you're exactly right. I am looking at kind of what that 5 to 10 year horizon looks like. And we do actually have some options, downtown if we'd so choose. But at this point, we have a lot more that we want to do with the current footprint.
Last 30 seconds here, shameless plug time. How can people learn more and get involved if they want to?
So go to our website. You can see all the programs there. We'd love for you to become a member. I will say with the Ai Weiwei Show, I strongly recommend you get your tickets ahead of time so you can come the day and time you want, because we do have some busy moments for that. And then follow us on all the social media, particularly Instagram, and on our YouTube channel. You'll see a lot of content there.
And do give us the website.
We are sam.org.
Sam.org, simple enough. All right, Scott, thanks so much for coming to Northwest Now. Great conversation.
Thank you.
Seattle is now a well-established high-dollar art mecca of national importance. The bottom line? Tomorrow's art superstars in any medium don't start high dollar. They start dead broke. And that's why I've said it once and I'll say it again. Don't be too surprised if the next big thing in Northwest art or music is spawned in the more affordable South Sound or even beyond. In the meantime, I thank Scott Stulen for coming to Northwest Now and encourage you to check out all 3 venues operated by the Seattle Art Museum.